Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Welcome to Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge, bringing you more stories about incredible women who share their knowledge and let you in on their amazing experiences, all to help you learn and grow along the way. My special guest today is Lisa Lieberman Doctor. Lisa currently leads writing workshops in LA and also teaches at the UCLA Extension Writers Program. She's the author of a new book, Accidental Poetry, Improve Your English Through Creative Writing, and it's a book that helps people to learn the English language in an organic and effective way. Lisa was born and raised in Queens, New York. She enjoyed a 16-year career as a development and production executive in Los Angeles at companies including Universal Pictures, Warner Brothers, and TriStar Pictures. And then in 1995, she switched gears to become a staff writer on ABC's General Hospital and its spinoff, Poor Charles, and was nominated for a Daytime Emmy Award and Writers Guild Award for her work as part of the General Hospital team. It's quite a background. Lisa, it's such a pleasure to have you on my show. Welcome.
Thank you, Deirdre. Great to be here.
Well, you have such an interesting background as a former motion picture executive working with writers since 1977. Why did you switch gears from major Hollywood executive in motion pictures to writing?
Yes, well, good question. Hollywood is not very forgiving when it comes to age, especially with women, but with men as well.
Oh.
And I was 40 years old, and I was running Robin Williams' company, which was great fun. We did Mrs. Doubtfire together. And
I really love that movie.
Yeah, it was really a terrific experience. I worked with him and his then-wife, Marsha, for 2.5 years. And I had turned 40, and I realized I was older than all the other executives that I knew, the development executives around town, by about 10 to 15 years. And I thought, okay, now I have to start thinking about what I want to do next. And I sort of, I say serendipitously, it's a small town in Hollywood. People know each other, of course. And I knew the executive producer of General Hospital. And I thought, maybe this is my next frontier. So I asked her about it, and she said, would you like to train and learn how to do this? And I said, I'd love to. And I did. They were lovely about training me. And when I had to tell Robin and his wife that I was leaving them to go work on General Hospital, they thought I was kidding. But So I left a really great job, with only some regrets because I so enjoyed being in the inner sanctum as I was. But then I went to the inner sanctum of the soap opera world, which was a completely different way of functioning. And I wrote about 100 shows every 4 or 5 days. One has to hand in the next episode, and with only 2 weeks off per year, it's really grueling, but fantastically fun, and I just loved doing it. It was really fun and different, so different than anything I'd been doing before. So nobody really believed me that I was doing it. My friends and colleagues, they laughed. They thought just like Robin did, they thought I was kidding when I said I'm leaving TriStar Pictures and Robin Williams Production Company after we just had this huge mega hit, and I'm going to write soap operas. They thought I had lost my mind.
And oh my gosh!
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it was a good move for you. I just remember when Mrs. Doubtfire came out. It's still a movie, believe it or not. I can't even tell you how many times I've watched it. But sometimes when I'm doing work and I just want something in the background, if that movie is on, I will definitely put it on. I have to ask you this question. What was it like to work with Robin and his wife?
He was awesome. Sorely missed. In fact, it's been a very difficult day and a half because yesterday, actually last 24 hours, I heard that my other employer, who I always enjoyed working with, Jerry Weintraub, passed away. So three of my former employers died this year. Yes, I ran.
Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I saw that in the news.
Yeah. It took me by surprise and with great sadness. And of course, when Robin died last year, on one hand, I was shocked, and on the other, I wasn't all that surprised that makes sense. It was sort of a dual response to it. But he was incredibly generous and kind, and Marsha was too. She was learning the ropes as a producer, but was very bright and learned quickly. And they brought me in. I had a lot of experience at that point. They brought me in to their company after I had had 14 years as an executive. So they were brand new to the world of movie production, of them being producers. He had been an actor for hire at that point. And they wanted to develop material for him and also material that he and Marsha would produce that he wouldn't star in. So I came into the company sort of showing them the ropes, which was kind of fun. Oh. He was such a major movie star. And they allowed
that's
me to,
incredible. You know, that's absolutely incredible.
There were a lot of people that applied for that job, and it was narrowed down to just a few. I'm not saying this with any kind of arrogance at all. Believe me, I truly am not that way. But it was a great honor to be told that I was the one that they had chosen, and it was jumping right into the highest profile, job that was, with front page news and the trades that Robin and Marsha were starting a production company at TriStar Pictures. And we went immediately into pre-production on Mrs. Doubtfire. In fact, that was the script they gave me to read. It was called Madame Doubtfire at the time, and it was an
That's an interesting little bit of a trivia there. Madame Doubtfire.
Yeah, they said, that was the name of the book. It was based on an English children's book, and it had been developed at another studio at United Artists and was in what's called turnaround, which means that they were not planning. And so it went into turnaround, and 20th Century Fox picked it up, and Chris Columbus, an extraordinary director, jumped on board, and we developed a new screenplay and went into production, and the rest is sort of history. Many people say what you say, Deirdre, that they turn it on just for the comfort of this really fun movie. He was so, I actually, when I would see
him in that movie,
I forgot it was Robin.
Wow, you must have had such an incredible experience. So you transitioning into the writing is so intense, the 100 shows every 4 or 5 days, I can't even imagine. So let's kind of fast forward. You kept up with this writing, and you just launched a new book, so Accidental Poetry. Tell us how this book is different than others that may help people to improve their skills.
Okay, I'll be happy to. I've always believed that we have to continue to sort of reinvent ourselves, and I talk to lots of women who are younger than me, and women in my age group as well. I won't say the end of a career, but after a long career, when again, I don't know if Los Angeles is different than other parts of the country. I suspect in some ways it is, and in some ways it's not. But in the ways that it's different out here, it's a very youth-driven culture in Los Angeles.
Right.
So when women get into their 50s and 60s, they start to wonder, how am I not going to be invisible? What can I do? And what I always advise women is to, when I'm in the position to do that, whether they ask for my advice or not, actually, I say that, find what you did best in your career and what was your passion, what did you love, and build on that. So for me, for 39 years, I've been working with writers. I fell into it very quickly. Back then it was easier I will get to answer your question. I mean to go around in a circle, but.
Oh, no problem. It's very interesting.
Oh, thanks. When I first moved to Los Angeles, I found myself reading scripts for a brand new actor who had just come on the scene named Sylvester Stallone. And it was
cool.
Really, Rocky had just been released. He was a star overnight, very unusual for that to happen. And so that's when it began in the 1970s. I started working for him at the end of 1977. So in over the years, I've had to constantly sort of tweak what I do so that I could stay current and viable. And the movie business was not something that one can usually stay in for one's entire career. It just doesn't work that way. Some people can if they really put all their efforts into it, but I kind of didn't want to. So for me, helping writers felt really important, and I became a teacher after I left General Hospital. And I serendipitously was teaching creative writing in Mallorca, Spain, and I had new speakers of English, and I gave them some of the questions, the writing exercises that I give to the writers that I work with here to deepen their characters. And I found that their English skills improved tenfold over any other method that I could have used.
Excellent.
So it was exciting as can be. I would ask them questions like, what makes you feel alive? Or what do you not want people to know about you? You know, basically simple questions. And I found that people with 100 words in their vocabulary were able to really communicate. And it seemed like poetry to me because they had a limited vocabulary, so they had to use words that weren't exactly the way native English speakers would use language, but it communicated very clearly what they were feeling. And I was knocked out by how these students were responding to the questions and how beautiful their writing was. So I went back to Mallorca 3 more times to teach at the University of the Balearic Islands with great success, and the classes were overflowing. They were beyond filled. People were loving it. And then I went to teach at the language school, and 72 people showed up in a classroom that held 15.
So my!
It was so exciting. It was so
exciting. That's really exciting.
I know. And
you're a good teacher.
Well, I love teaching, and it came from working, you know, as a movie executive, I was very fortunate because of my high profile bosses like the late Jerry Weintraub and Robin Williams and others. I was able to work with writers who won the Academy Award and the Emmy and the Penn and the Tony. They were really first-rate writers, in addition to new writers coming up. So it was wonderful to be able to work with writers on such a deep level. And then I switched that over to my teaching to work with professional writers here in L.A. So it was really exciting to see people who were just learning English, who had all this talent and so much that they wanted to communicate. Many of them didn't want to be writers. They just wanted to learn the language. And they asked me if I would put together a book. So I wasn't going to at first because I love being in the room with writers when they're, and so I could hear it. I didn't want to put a book out where I wouldn't hear their responses. But I decided to do, I figured, if not now, when? So I came up with the title Accidental Poetry as sort of an antidote to the term that I hate, which is broken English. Makes my skin crawl when I hear that. And so this is the opposite. And in fact, right on the first page, I use the words of one of my former students. And she was brand new to English. And she wrote, "The words fall from my mouth, and the man in the bar sweeps them away with his broom."
Oh, my.
Isn't that something?
So yeah, that is something.
I used a lot of their little snippets of what I call poetry throughout the book, and I divided it into sections, which is how I teach character development. So, then, for example, in the chapter of lighter colors, the question might be, "How has compassion for others changed your life?" In the darker colors, it might be, "When have you grasped for hope only to have it elude you?" In the section on parents, "What qualities of your mother have become yours?" And in evolving and epiphanies, I have, "What is no longer important that once was, and what's important now that wasn't before?" So they get to really think and communicate, and then I taught it in Barcelona last summer, and I'm going back in the fall to teach again in Barcelona and in Milan, and just I'm expanding it, putting together workshops that I can be part of, and also have the book out there for people to use, even if I never get to meet them.
But, well, that's terrific. It sounds, well, I understand now the accidental poetry, and I think the title truly speaks to the meaning behind what you're trying to do. And it also sounds like over the years you've helped people to stand out as well. I'm talking to my special guest, Lisa Lieberman Doctor, author of Accidental Poetry. In the next segment, Lisa will discuss how to excel as a writer and how to overcome writer's block.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communications and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from interest to action, giving you a roadmap that fosters deeper engagement and forges stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformance.com. Thank you.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge, host of Women Worldwide. Welcome back to the show, where Lisa Doctor and I were just chatting about her new book, Accidental Poetry, and how to make yourself stand out as a writer. So, Lisa, we've talked a lot about your career and getting into writing. You've been doing it for so long. What is your favorite type of writing?
Well, my favorite type of writing is I love literary fiction where I really get a deep sense of the protagonist. And because I teach creative writing classes that for professional writers, and I say creative writing, it's really deepening characters. That's what we go through, where we take the questions that are in accidental poetry and we have the character in first person answer the question. So the author functions more like a court reporter, just taking down the words, and the character does the responding. That's the sort of writing that I love, where I really get a deep sense where the book becomes a mirror looking back at the reader, where I can really see myself in it. How is that character going to respond? Just to go as deep as possible, to sort of hit bedrock with the character so that we really feel on a deep level who is telling the story, because that's the most fun about reading, is to connect and really learn about humans.
I love to read. I agree with you 100%. I've never tried that type of writing myself, but it sounds wonderful.
Oh, you should. And I'll help you.
I think I might, after this discussion, I might have to. So
great.
As a writer, do you feel that people need to specialize in a specific area, and if you should, how do you discover what that area is?
That's an excellent question. Yeah, there's a thing called branding, which I'm sure you're very familiar with. And
yes,
and I'm sure you are. And agents really do want their clients to sort of be branded. And if they're going to go away from what that brand is, very often they'll still suggest possibly using a pseudonym. Because what happens, agents particularly and editors at publishing companies, if a writer's going to go out and do it independently, and there's really an opportunity now for writers like never before to build an audience on their own. It's incredible how that has sort of taken off, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. People are, a lot of published writers with traditional publishing are very concerned about all of the books that are available that are just sort of thrown up there on the internet, but there are also a lot that are really quite good, and are, I think, as good as ones that are traditionally published that can be found, and very often they do build an audience. So with branding, what you do is you find what it is that you love, what you're drawn to, and then if the books sort of follow that, they just follow the basic path of what that first novel is, then you can build an audience, because readers will then expect something similar the next time around. And when writers have sort of a collection of their work online and they find that readers want their books one after the other and they're waiting for the next book, it's because they have an expectation of what that book is going to be and they don't want to be disappointed. So but it's really important for the writer. One has to write from one's passion and not to fulfill, marketing. Once you find
what
you love,
so true.
Yeah, you have to stay with what you love. And if you stay with what you love, the reader will know that you love it and they'll want to read more and more. When I think of the, authors that I've read more than one book, because there's different stories, but there's a sensibility with that author that I'm looking for. There's a depth, there's an honesty, there's a way of expressing through language and story. And I'll look when I'm excited when the next book will come out. It's like, oh, well, now I can read that author again. So it's not that it's the same story set in the same place, but there's sort of a thumbprint that readers can then find again.
Yeah, I mean, with branding in general, it's that promise. So when you have a brand, it's a promise, and you need to live up to the expectations of the brand. So I could see the readers certainly wanting to get more of what they're used to and what they expect and what excites them, and that is definitely a brand promise. And I think that would happen whether you write novels, you write poetry, you write business books, whatever that is. That's really interesting.
That's correct.
You wrote a novel. You wrote a 224-page novel.
I've actually just completed my fourth novel. And my agent has the three new ones that she's putting together to go out with as a group of novels, because that's also interesting to publishers when there's more than one. They don't want sort of a one-shot deal. They like to know what's next. So I completed three and gave them
exciting.
The one. Yeah, I love writing, and it makes me a better teacher. I find. In fact, teaching at the UCLA Extension, they want published writers to be the teachers. They want the teachers to have gone through the experience of what it is to write a novel. It's a very complex experience, a lot of balls to juggle all at the same time. And it's not for everybody. I've probably given out thousands of business cards to people who tell me they want to write a novel. And then they find out what it entails, and they say, oops, that's kind of not what I thought it was going to be.
It entails a lot, I'm sure.
It takes a long time. Yeah, I teach 4 or 5 classes a week, and I have writers I've been working with for sometimes 5 years on a novel. You know, some of them in a year and a half, rarely less than a year, very rarely. I had one writer who was very prolific, and he actually had a series of books published, legal thrillers, and he was just had that knack to get it out there. There are writers that can do that, but typically it takes a couple of years to write a novel, and people don't realize that. They don't understand how much goes into getting it the best it can be, which is what I promise writers. I can't promise publications, but publication for them, but I do tell them that if they work with me, they will get very focused guidance, and their writing will improve. Will it be publishable by traditional publishers? Nobody could say that. No one can make it.
Right, hard to tell. And you know what? Self-publishing, as you said before, has really taken off. So there are so many different options. What? Let's take you back. So what advice, if you were going to look at yourself at age 17 and then again at age 25, and I do think that those are defining years, what advice would you give yourself at those two points in your life?
I love those questions. Of course, it was a really long time ago.
Oh, not so long ago.
No, it is. I was told you're never supposed to say your age on the radio, and every time I do this, I'll say, I'm 61, and you know what? I'm proud of it, and I want to change, especially living in L.A. I want
good to for
change
you.
That model. Yeah, I'm 61, and I'm proud of that, and if somebody doesn't want to hire me because of it, then that's their loss. I have a lot of experience that I've culled over these years, and I'm very proud to be 61 years old. So 17 and 25 do seem like a long time ago, but I can answer your question. It's funny, the first novel that I wrote was called The Deflowering of Rona Lipschitz, and it was after working on General Hospital, I needed to find my own voice because I was writing writing scripts for characters that don't exist in nature. There were no people like the people I was writing about. That's just a fact. I'd never met anybody like any of the characters I was writing about in soap opera, and I wanted to go back to my New York voice. So I wrote that, and the character actually, it was 17, and it was set in 1971. So I had to get in touch with that 17-year-old, and so the advice I would give to her was, she did the right thing. She really wanted, not that there was anything wrong with the neighborhood I grew up in, I loved it, but I felt very claustrophobic there, and I needed to learn about the world, and I moved west, like the pioneers did, except I didn't come out in a covered wagon. It was a car, certainly, but the advice would be, you're making the right choice. You need to get out. Nice. You'll always love it, have wonderful memories, but it was actually a great choice. At 25, I was vice president at a company at Warner Brothers, and I think the advice I would tell that person is, don't despair. There's more to life than money and power. That's what I was surrounded by. And that, you know, I was too young to understand sort of the deeper spiritual journey at that point. It didn't happen until much later in my life, till into my 40s. So there was I had no real understanding of something deeper than, success and competition and moving up the ladder. I was so proud to be a vice president at 25 that I didn't see anything beyond that. And it was before I had children, so I was really on this trajectory of getting ahead.
Right. I think we're constantly redefining as we get older. Yeah. So, you know, success at 25 is definitely, definitely different. That was great that you went back and shared that. Thank you. And another thing that I'm really curious about, kind of switching gears, but still on the writing topic. You know a lot of writers. You are a writer. I'm a writer. We all get writer's block. So at one time or another, give some really good advice to others who get writer's block. What can you do?
Oh, great. I actually teach a class called Breaking Through Writer's Block.
So nice.
Yeah, I love teaching this class because I actually taught it recently, and people came into the room who hadn't written in a long time, and they didn't bring anything to write with. I thought that was fascinating. I said, well, did you think we weren't going to be writing? They said, no, we thought we were going to be talking about writer's block. I said, no, we're here to break through. So I handed out papers and tests. I thought that was really kind of sweet.
That's hysterical.
And it was great. Then they started writing, and then they couldn't stop. And the reason I don't like teaching that class, but that's the problem of teaching that class. Once they start, I have to then say to them, okay, guys,
we got to go now, guys.
You have to go. And they're like, no, wait. So I know it was successful, but I still have to ask them to stop writing, which is the antithesis of what the class was all about. What I do to help writers with writer's block is I've developed over 500 exercises, writing exercises. 247 of them are in accidental poetry, which is, again, how this book began. And I'll look at what each writer is blocked. Usually, they're blocked because of the character, not because of the plot, which is the series of events. Story, for me, the definition of story is the character's journey. That's the story. The plot is the events that happen along the way. So they get blocked when they're blocked. Character and story being the same thing, they're blocked usually because they don't understand their character well enough. So I have to find for them the place where they connect to their character on a very deep level, and then they write from that place. And once they see their character in a deeper way, it's amazing how the block sort of melts away. I see it over and over and over again, so I feel pretty confident saying that. So what I'll do is, let's say, for example, someone is blocked with their character, and they don't know. They don't know where the character is going. So I'll ask them something like, what wounds have you kept hidden and what wounds have not healed? And I'll say, step away, let the character speak in first person. You just take down the words and see what and then they write and they write and they write and they write. And then they read it back and they're telling anecdotes from the character's point of view of things that happen. And I just watch the sort of the clouds part to reveal clarity. It's very exciting.
Oh, that is exciting. That's a fascinating process.
It's very cool. Yeah,
they must feel so satisfied to be able to. It's like a wave of relief to let everything out and to be able to continue on with their writing. Very cool,
exactly.
Lisa.
I taught 13 writing workshops at the Esalen Institute in Big Sur. I don't know if that's known back east, but it's sort of known worldwide. It's an incredible institute for self-awareness and improvement. And I have taught classes that help people who are blocked to come there. And it's a very intensive thing. We work for an entire week, 6 hours a day, either 5 to 7 days. And
that's a lot.
Yeah, very intensive, and we have meals together, and I have them paint the colors of their characters, the emotional colors. We do all kinds of things to have them really connect. And by the end of the week, I always see the incredible improvements in their own view of what they're writing and who their characters are. That's the main thing, if writers are listening, is to really connect deeply to who your protagonist is, as deeply as you can. And that's where these exercises are really helpful. So it's not just for learning English. I find that people who have been contacting me, who are buying the book, are writers, English-speaking writers, who say they're using it to deepen their characters.
Well, what you're doing truly is making a difference, and you're seeing it all the time. That's wonderful. So last question, where can my listeners find out more about you and your new book, Accidental Poetry?
Oh, I so appreciate that. My website is lisadoctor.com, and the book is on Amazon. You gave them the name the name of the book and my name, and there it is on Amazon. The best place to buy books. Most books are sold on Amazon these days. It's not such a bad
yes,
thing.
They are there. So true. Well,
they
Lisa,
are the
thank
main,
you.
Yes. Thank you, Deirdre.
Thank you so much for joining us and for sharing your thoughts about writing and your journey and incredible background. So truly a pleasure to interview you.
A pleasure being interviewed by you, Deirdre. Thank you so much for the great questions and being so receptive to whatever I have to say. I really appreciate that, too. Thank you.
Oh, well, all great information. Thank you. And I'd also like to thank everyone for tuning into Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. And until we meet again for our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge, brought to you by Pure Performance Communications on the socialnetworkstation.com. You can reach Pure Performance at www.pureperformancecom.com. Women Worldwide is produced by SNI, and the opinions of the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of Social Network Intermedia, LLC, or the Social Network Station.